Now, if you like what you hear today, you can go ahead and like us on Facebook. It's All Access Pass. And if you really like us and want to either suggest a topic or get involved, email us at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. That's with three I's. Accessibility is kind of hard to spell out. Now, we're going to start off with a song by Ingrid Michaelson. This is Way I Am. Stick around on All Access Pass. We'll be right back. Hello, you are listening to All Access Pass. That was just Ingrid Michaelson's Way I Am. It's a warm, cozy song for this weather, and it's off her 2014 album, Who is Ingrid Michaelson? Now, you were just listening to her, and this week's topic on All Access Pass is stigmas towards ADD and ADHD. When we say stigmas, we mean the misunderstandings about the two that exist when we talk about them. Many, including ADHD and ADD, are many, including the stigma that ADD and ADHD are fabricated mental disorders, have damaging effects on those that have it. For example, later in this hour, our producer Emily will be explaining how doctors are significantly less likely to diagnose women with ADHD than men. This week, the Access Collective, led by our amazing volunteer contributor Lauren Hart, tackled what exactly these stigmas are, where they come from, and where they exist in the public's attention. For example, the American Olympic medalist Simone Biles and swimmer Michael Phelps have openly spoke about their ADHD and have been able to advocate towards a large public audience against stigmas, which is another topic I will be talking about in this hour. We are now going to listen to a discussion that Lauren and I had, as well as some excerpts from some great TED Talks. For those of you who have listened to the show before, you are familiar with Lauren. She's a second-year UBC arts student who plans to major in film studies. She joined our team in October and since then has been doing some great work for the show, including the research for our interesting Trump discussion and facilitating the interview with UBC student Maywa. First, when she first came to our show, she met with me and at our volunteer meetings, and she immediately expressed her interest in our collective on a personal level as someone with ADHD.
And ADD is not even seen as like a legitimate mental health issue. It's kind of, it's in the media and this discourse, it is kind of, it's people, reason that it is fabricated, it's invented that ADD and ADHD are not actual mental health disabilities.
So there's these different reasons that are being created through this discourse on why ADHD would be invented and who would benefit from its invention. And one of the examples is teachers being unable to cope with fidgety kids, so just wanting to medicate hyper children in order to make their jobs easier. Another one is pharmaceutical propaganda, which is a big one. That's a lot of people's reasons for discrediting ADHD and ADD. And another one is impatient parents, which is kind of ironic because one of the myths of the causes of symptoms is bad parenting. So it's this weird double standard of how parents can cause and invent ADD at the same time.
Because of this stigma, it doesn't just extend to a misconception about ADD and ADHD it's not just a misconception that delegitimizes and the seriousness of ADD and ADHD. It also extends to have much more personal consequences. Like, it reflects back on people with ADD and ADHD, which is something you mentioned, which was, I think, one of the reasons why you said you approached this topic for your report.
Yeah, I actually did a whole term paper on this topic last year in my Words 150 class, which is the theme was focusing on disability, and a big chunk of that was what they called invisible disabilities and the differences between physical and, yeah, and so I was writing this term paper based on the stigma of ADHD, and I was having difficulties myself with my organization skills, which is probably one of the main aspects of my life that has been affected by ADD. And I missed class a few times, and it was one of those small classes where the professor notices if you don't make it. And so she actually emailed me and wanted to talk to me about how my absence was going to affect my grade. And I was over here worrying about what I was going to say to her and how I was going to explain my absences. And I realized that this class was based around disability, and out of all professors, I should be able to feel like I can talk to her about it, which is just points out my hesitancy to seek help and explain myself is because of the stigma that I felt like it was going to seem like I was being lazy or making excuses. And I think that's a big issue with this stigma, is that it really prevents people from seeking help because it is seen as making an excuse, and it's not seen as a valid excuse a lot of times. So then when I actually kind of went out of my comfort zone and talked to my professor about it, she was so understanding and took the extra time to help me catch up and explain things to me at her office hours. And I think that's important for people to remember, that it's not weak to like seek help. And I think that's a big issue that we have in university, because a lot of people struggle silently and they don't seek help because of these types of stigmas. And that applies to more than just ADHD. It applies to other mental health issues.
Right, right. And well, one of the things that we looked at when we were doing our research for this piece was some interesting TED Talks on stigmas towards ADD and ADHD. And we actually found a very interesting TED Talk, and it was done by Salif Mahamin. And he kind of has a really interesting way of seeing and explaining.
Yeah, he has ADHD.
So yeah, we're just going to play that for you now.
A few years ago, scientists discovered that men of a certain nomadic group in Kenya who had a genetic variant that's implicated in the restlessness and shifting curiosity of ADHD were better nourished than their counterparts without the variant. But in a group of those same people who split off to live sedentary lives, the men with the variant were undernourished compared to their counterparts. Interesting. This information has kindled discussion as to whether ADHD should even be pathologized. I mean, if it was adaptive for survival, then it's supposed to be here. And whether you know it or not, humankind, you're grateful for us. So could we at least start going by potential hunting and gathering badasses instead? But What good would that do us, right? I mean, the 16.2 million people in America alone with ADHD can all abandon modern life for hunting and gathering. I mean, I'm definitely considering it. But it just gets one thinking. Is ADHD inherently dysfunctional, or is it more of a fish out of water condition? Imagine traits that were once potent fuel for the fire of nomadic success are now remnants, glowing embers waiting to be stoked, nurtured back to life. What if the stigma of ADHD and its exclusion from mainstream ideas of functionality is a prohibitive drizzle suppressing those embers, though unable to extinguish them?
Yeah, so I think here he poses a really interesting point about viewing ADD as an advantage, maybe not at this point in time or with our modern society, but ADD could have been caused by an adaptation that at one time was an advantage for the hunter-gathering lifestyle. So viewing ADD in these different ways can help break down the stigma, and that it's not necessarily a disorder. And I like how he said the fish out of water concept, and just that maybe there's an issue with the structure of our education system and the way that things can only be done a certain way, and that just some people aren't necessarily fitted to that, to our society in that sense.
Right, and in that sense, we also had a lot of problems with the model that gets put out in education systems. Well, not even just the model, the attitudes or this kind of quick way of solving how to deal with misbehaving kids that have ADD and ADHD, instead of actually like honing in on this and being like, you know, they're not like, you know, maybe they don't learn like everybody else, but they do learn, and it just takes a bit of patience and a different type of teaching method to approach them with the same material. I think we found that does really need to change. And we were listening to another talk at TED Talk, and it was by Rebecca Hennison. So she is a consultant organizational development and sales guru for Franklin Covey for the last 10 years, and her husband and son both have ADHD. And you were explaining to me a little bit about her model that she proposes. That's, I think, a lot better than what we have right now.
So Rebecca talks about this model called the assembly line, is how she explains it, is our current educational model, where every day everyone is lined up at the beginning, especially in primary and secondary school. Everyone's lined up and they push them through the assembly line, going through different chunks of the day, different periods, covering different topics for 40 minutes at a time, maybe more than that. And that model is not sustainable, especially with the millions of people that have been diagnosed with ADD and ADHD in the U.S. and Canada. And how she was saying that there's this aspect of ADD called hyperfocus is the medical, or it's the, find something that they find really interesting and that they almost over-focus on it, which is still a form of a dysregulation of attention because it's hard to be pulled out of that. But when someone finds something that interesting and they have ADD, it's called hyperfocus. And she's saying that someone with ADD in the assembly line is lucky if they find one of those 40-minute periods to be so interesting that they can really sustain their focus on it. Otherwise, it's just kind of chaos for them throughout the day, trying to be pulled along with everyone else at the same rate. A sustainable method.
Maybe.
And so she suggests another method called research and development, which is where if a kid gets diagnosed with ADD, instead of the doctor telling them, I'm so sorry, you're going to have to start taking these medications and we're going to have to go down this path, it's more seen as an alternative form of education, and it could be seen as an opportunity to go into what she calls research and development, where you can take that interest and what you can have hyper-focus on and really follow that path and do research on it, which she says is a much more sustainable way of educating these kids that just don't follow the assembly line.
Yeah, so one of the things, one positive thing and a positive change that we can go forward with, another suggestion that we saw when we were researching was, with this approaching education on more of a research basis, even just improving the research that is there, not in terms of improving it, but making it more accessible. Because what people are basing their stigmas off of aren't real scientific facts and studies. They're just assumed pieces of knowledge. So another thing that you were mentioning was the pharmaceutical industry's play in all of this, which is kind of messy and a kind of a double-ended sword. One of the things you were mentioning, Lauren, was the overdiagnosis of ADHD and what makes this so problematic and how can we better from it?
Yeah, well, there's this controversy between whether ADHD is overdiagnosed or underdiagnosed. So the idea of it being overdiagnosed really plays into the stigma, because that is part of why people don't take it as seriously, and they see doctors to be very willing to diagnose ADHD without much of an evaluation. Yeah, people say that doctors are so willing to throw a diagnosis of ADD or ADHD out there. And part of that reason may be for the benefit of pharmaceutical incentives, and that is selling of these medications for ADHD. And so that definitely plays into the stigma. And I think that that's something that really needs to be looked at and improved upon. One of the TED Talks we were looking at, which was more of a scientific approach with Tracy Sweetapple, talked about how it has only been within the last 3 years that psychiatrists in Canada have been expected to have the knowledge of adult ADHD for their board exams, which leaves a huge chasm for our school-age population with ADHD and leads to negative consequences for all of society. And so just recognizing that ADHD needs to be taken more seriously, and that definitely goes into doctors' understanding of it as well as the general public's understanding of it.
Yeah, so going off that, one of the many things we can do to improve this stigma, to take it down and understand it better, is through an education, a better approach to education, a newly made model that's research-based, kind of similar to what Rebecca Hennison says. Another thing is to improve the access and general knowledge of scientific research that is actually done on ADD and ADHD, so that people don't have these assumptions when there even is an open discussion, to make sure that they're backed by the proper facts, as well as trying to understand, Sweetapple does say is very, very important, is that we need to improve the training of our doctors on diagnosing ADHD. Now, we just want to end off here with a excerpt from a TED Talk we keep referencing. This is Rebecca Hennison's TED Talk she did in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Again, she's a consultant, organizational development, and sales guru for Franklin Covey, and she very adorably phrases that her expertise on stigmas comes from living and loving her ADHD husband and son for more than 141,322 hours of her life. Her TED Talk is titled, Not Wrong, Just Different, ADHD as Innovators.
Our son entered into sixth grade last year. At the beginning of the year, the assessment showed that he was reading as a senior and writing as a sophomore at the beginning of sixth grade. Not a bad kid. He entered into the school year. He started off with reading and English grades of B+, then it went to a B-, then it went to a C, and he finished the year with a D. At the end of the year, the assessment showed that he was still reading and writing in the top 10% of his kids his age in the state. And he came to me on the last day of school, and he sat down across my desk in our home office, and his head was down and his shoulders were slumped, and he was choking back tears. And he said, I got a D. Well, I knew he got a D. I'd been watching it on Power School all year, and I've been trying to communicate with the teachers in the assembly line who don't like the hurricane in their class because that makes their job hard, and I get that. So all I could do as a mom is I had him lift his eyes up to meet mine, and I said, hey, hold on a minute. And I pulled out the copies of the assessments that I keep copies of, and I said, remember this? you were most likely the smartest kid in your class. And he brightened up a little bit and he said, do you think? I said, I don't think, I know, and I've got the statistics to prove it. He said, but I got a D. I said, yes, young man, you did. And let me remind you and let me apologize for the fact that you live in a time when your education system does not match the needs that you have. And your grades will almost always likely be a measure of your organizational ability, not your intelligence. And I'm also sorry to say that your organization ability will probably always suck. So if you let that determine who you are, we're both in trouble. We can't let that happen. And I won't let that happen.
So that kind of ends our talk on stigmas, kind of explaining stigmas towards ADD and ADHD. I hope this got you guys a lot more informed on stigmas, and maybe next time you're in a conversation, you'll kind of have a better idea of what causes them and how we can create a better discourse, a better discussion about ADD and ADHD. So with that, I'm going to pass it off to Lauren. Lauren, if you want to go ahead and just introduce our next song.
Yeah, so we're going to play Fog by Nosaj Thing. Nosaj Thing is a DJ producer from LA, and his name is Jason Chung. And I just wanted to share real fast that in April of 2015, Jason actually had all of his equipment stolen before one of his shows, which I just think is so sad. And he had his laptop and his hard drive all in there, and he had to restart basically before one of his shows, stayed up all night trying to come up with, just muster up some sort of song that he could play, and it's just such a bummer. But yeah, it really shows like his passion for the music, and I love listening to Nosaj Thing while I study. I think this is relevant to the topic because before last year I never listened to music while I studied, which just takes away from the potential enjoyment of studying, if you view it like that. But I never could listen to music while I studied because it was just so distracting, and now I've discovered music that really suits my studying, putting over ear headphones on, and it just blocks out noise. But it takes a certain style of music to really like retain my focus. So Nosaj Thing is one artist that I always have no trouble studying to, with his his pulsating kind of electronic music it's not just study music. You can listen to it anytime. So here's Fog by Nosaj Thing.
world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit CITR.ca/discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
Hey guys, you are listening to All Access Pass. You are just listening to the song Fog by Nosaj Thing, who is an American radio producer. Definitely worth checking out some of his other albums. That was off his 2009 album Drift. He also has an album Faded and Home. All excellent, excellent study music. So with that, I'd like to introduce you to a new topic, and that is sports and ADHD. So what do basketball players Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, or well-known baseball player Pete Rose, or even Olympian with 28 medals Michael Phelps, or four-time Super Bowl champion Terry Bradshaw, or a 19 Olympic and world champion medalist Simone Biles all have in common? On a professional note, they are well-known for their respective and incredible achievements in the history of sports today. On a personal note, though, they all suffer from some form or are diagnosed or have been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, or attention deficit disorder, ADD, a condition that is hugely stigmatized and yet controversial, raises several interesting questions, such as, does ADHD hinder or help sporting success, and can the Olympics offer a positive legacy for people suffering from it? However, for Phelps, a gangly, superactive child who was diagnosed with the condition at age 9, he felt that the swimming pool was his sanctuary and place to burn off excess energy. Even though ADHD is a confusing condition and those who have it are often fidgety and unable to focus, his mom remembers him being told by his teacher and she being told that her son will never be able to focus on anything. However, we all know that this is all wrong, and it's amazing that a boy who was unable to concentrate at school would sit for hours at his swimming meets to wait to compete in races. So even though ADHD is a confusing condition, and those that have it are often fidgety and unable to focus, they can and are capable of concentrating intently on activity they find rewarding. Athletes like Phelps do not, however, have a special power. We need to make that clear due to their condition. According to Andrea Bilbo, who is the founder and chief executive of ADDIS and charity support service for ADHD, she believes it is actually harder for people with ADHD to become elite athletes. Now, she says that having ADHD doesn't mean you're going to be a great sports person. She goes on to say your ADHD isn't always going to get you there. It's hard work. That will. ADHD is not a contributor towards success, but equally it is not a barrier to success. Furthermore, she says, people with developmental disorders may find they have poor problem-solving skills, struggle with timekeeping and organizing and motivating themselves. However, by adapting to the discipline demands for athletic training, there are such sports that gives them the kind of immediate reward and sense of achievement they need to build confidence and resilience. And she ends her quote there. Bilbo believes that parents should find a sport to construct ways of managing the condition and advises parents to find your child's island of competence and invest in it heavily. Andrea also believes that Olympians with ADHD may really inspire a generation of athletes who have once been written off. She explains her theory by saying that parents can be saying to kids who are having a miserable time in school, look, Michael Phelps had ADHD and he worked really hard. Ashley McKenzie had been in a Young Offenders Institute, but he didn't give up. And she concludes by saying this, that's the message we've got to give to kids. To explain further the stigma with ADHD among sports athletes, in the summer of this year, Simone Biles stuck her landing in the floor exercise to win her fifth medal at the 2006 Rio Games and cemented her status as an Olympic legend. Despite these historical accomplishments, a few months ago, Biles stuck out for kids with ADHD and became an even bigger hero. The confidential medical records were hacked, and it was discovered from the Anti-Doping Agency database and tried to use Biles' use of prescription medicine to question her credentials. But the 19-year-old gymnast sent out a powerful message about stigma, mental health, and sports by writing, "I have ADHD, and I've taken the medicine for it since I was a kid. Please know I believe in a clean sport. Have always followed the rules and will continue to do so, as fair play is critical to sport and is very important to me." She tweets in a message on her Twitter account by writing, "Having ADHD, taking medicine for it, is nothing to be ashamed of. Nothing that I'm afraid to let people know." The leaked medical records reveal that Biles takes Ritalin, a stimulant commonly used to treat ADHD, and therefore accused her of using illicit psychostimulant while competing. But the U.S. Gymnastics confirmed that Biles had been approved for therapeutic use exemption, so she didn't break any rules by taking Ritalin. But the fact of her decision to clear the air in such a straightforward way and take a stand certainly broke down some lingering stereotypes. The hackers weren't the only ones who took offense to ADHD, but some coaches even scoff at the disorder by refusing to believe it is a real medical condition and not an inaction of bad behavior or poor parenting of an athlete, and it's often thought of as just not trying hard enough and dismissing the kid as uncoachable. Both parents and coaches need to understand that distractive, impulsive, or hyper behaviors are not willful but are part of brain wiring in ADHD children. This is a quote from Dr. Ronald Kam, a past president of the International Society for Sports Psychiatry and a member of the U.S. Gymnastics National Healthcare Referral Network. He goes on to say, "It's not personal, it's the condition. Prescribing medication for an ADHD child is no different from prescribing insulin for a diabetic." Dr. Kam further implies that medications such as Ritalin, which helps control symptoms such as hyperactivity and impulsivity, don't give athletes an unfair edge in competition. And goes on to say, "They are performance enablers, not performance enhancers." And further iterates that they simply level the playing field so that someone like Simone Biles has the same amount of dopamine in her prefrontal cortex as her competitors do. So there you have it. For anyone who may have a dream of becoming a sports athlete, you can achieve it even though you are diagnosed with ADHD or any other form of mental health disability by simply taking proper and safe medications, prescribed, of course, by a doctor. Just like Simone Biles, Phelps, and other famous sports athletes who have done well and made a name for themselves. Here at All Access Pass, our opinion is this. We all need to remember to be more open-minded when it comes to ADHD and ADD, and not to judge one another, as we are all equal and have the right to live our dreams. When we come back, our producer, Emily, is going to be talking about the diagnosis rates of ADHD between men and women. Did you know that statistically, women are diagnosed significantly less than their male counterparts? More on that and the effects of this after this song. This is Swim Team's new song, Red. It's from their new album called Out of the Flood, which was released just this October. And they are a local Vancouver band, so take a listen, guys.
Thank you. There's only one way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle. A tax-deductible receipt. And a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca. Get rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full details online at bullyingcanada.ca.
Hey guys, you were just listening to Swim Team's Red off their brand new album. Now I'm going to pass it over to Emily, who's going to be explaining about ADHD in women and girls.
And more accurately, according to a 2015 study in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry, it found an increase of 55% in ADHD diagnoses in girls in 2003 to 2011. That number was only 40% for boys, who historically have been the primary focus in diagnosing ADHD. New research also shows that ADHD most likely affects males and females equally, but girls were, and continue to be, severely underdiagnosed. The ratio of boys to girls' diagnoses used to be around 10 to 1, whereas now the ratio is 3 to 1. Amori Makami, a professor in the UBC Department of Psychology, conducted research on girls with ADHD. She says that because these girls tend to be underdiagnosed, they also tend to be understudied. She says they're more likely to have the inattentive subtype, which means the problems are primarily in paying attention and poor concentration, not as much with hyperactivity and impulsivity.
If girls are more likely to have the inattentive type, type of ADHD, it seems like those are symptoms that are just more easily overlooked, or they're less noticed by parents and teachers. Frankly, it's easier to not notice the girl in the back of the room who is daydreaming or lost in her own thoughts or spacing out, as opposed to the boy who is running around, climbing on things, taking things from other kids, arguing a lot, interrupting.
Because young white boys were the focus in the beginning steps to study and diagnose ADHD, there was a severe lag in studying any of the other demographics. Today, only 1% of all ADHD research focuses on girls, according to Dr. Ellen Littman, a psychologist who has studied young girls with ADHD. It is extremely important to study more than one subgroup because the guidelines are written around such studies and research. The American Psychiatric Association only recently changed the age at which most symptoms develop to 12 years from 7 years of age. This differentiation was a game changer because boys typically develop symptoms much earlier than girls. Amori would like to see better awareness and recognition of the quieter ways ADHD can manifest itself.
Daydreaming. Academic underperforming, because, for instance, somebody is bright but has trouble organizing all the details for a long-term assignment, or remembering to go step by step, or reading all of the instructions carefully. So you might see that, like I said, an academic underperformance, and parents or teachers say things to a child and it sort of goes in one ear out the other. So if people recognize those symptoms more as part of the diagnosis, then I think that girls and women will be better served.
Sarah Blythe, previously a Vancouver Park Board commissioner and currently working as manager of the Downtown Eastside Market, got diagnosed with ADHD when she was 9 or 10 years old. She says getting diagnosed didn't change much for her, but mostly because people didn't know how to move forward from there.
And then the way people react around you is, people don't understand it. Maybe your parents don't understand it. Maybe the people around you don't really understand it, what it feels like. And then, it's like it becomes this thing where you don't know whether you're going to be successful or not. You don't know how that, even if people try and explain it to you as a kid, how do you understand what being different is, and you feel normal, you look in the mirror and you look normal, you know that things are just different and harder in some ways. And
Amori found this disconnect between the girls and their friends as well. She found in her research that the girls with ADHD had poor social relationships that continued into their adult life.
As children, it is more common, at least as a group, that their classmates might be saying that they don't like to play with children with ADHD, or they're less likely to be friends with children with ADHD. I'm finding that in the teenage years, as well as even in the adult years, what you see is fewer friendships or less positive features in the friendships. And more recently, I found that for young adult women, if they had histories of childhood ADHD, when you looked on their Facebook pages, they did not look as popular or as well-liked, or they didn't have as much positivity or support going on in the interactions that they had with their friends.
All these small interactions add up to lower self-esteem and lower levels of happiness. Girls with ADHD are much more likely to self-harm or be suicidal than girls without ADHD. A 2012 study in the Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology found girls 3 to 4 times more likely to attempt suicide and 2 to 3 times more likely to injure themselves if they had ADHD. Amori found that they were also at an elevated risk for eating pathology, specifically body image concerns and bulimia nervosa.
Unfortunately, ADHD can really take its toll, especially if it's untreated. And I think that a lot of times what happens is that children who have ADHD, they get into very sad and unfortunately very negative cycles at school and at home and with peers. So if things at school really aren't going well, if there's a lot of fighting and conflict with teachers, school becomes like a very negative place. It might lead to school failure and underperformance and underachievement, which can lead to more conflict with teachers. If the peer relationships are bad, if many peers are rejecting or bullying for instance, then that's also can be another source of loneliness or anxiety or depression or negative feelings. A lot of times relationships with parents are also tumultuous because there can be just a lot of fighting and a lot of family struggles. It can be very stressful to have a child with ADHD. So I think research is growing, suggesting that sometimes it's basically like the sum total of those interpersonal processes over the years that can, for some youth, unfortunately, contribute to them thinking about suicide or attempting suicide.
Support in school systems from an early age is crucial to learning and development. Sarah found that once she was diagnosed, not much changed.
There's not a lot of support in school system for people with ADHD. You kind of just function the best you can. Like, you don't get extra supports for having ADHD, and that's another problem. So that makes it difficult, not only... There's supports for kids with autism, there's supports for other kinds of kids, but ADHD seems to just be that thing, yeah, group of kids that just slowly fall through the cracks. And you'll end, you see a lot of people with ADHD that didn't get help, that are not in that great of a situation as they get older.
In adult women, it doesn't get any easier. A 2016 study out of the University of Toronto looked at women 20 to 39 years of age, and they found significantly higher rates of suicidal ideation, generalized anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, and substance abuse. With the compounding of all these mental health issues, it followed that one in three of these women also reported difficulty in meeting basic needs like food, shelter, and clothing. Sarah says all of this can be a lot for a gender that already faces discrimination.
Girls and women are treated different anyways, and that's just another burden on top of everything else. It's just another layer of problems that a woman has to deal with. So, you know, you've either got to be strong or, you know, just and learn how to deal with it. You know, you're dealing with their stigma is even worse than the mental health issue that you're dealing with. The stigma towards you is the worst part of that. And coupled with being a woman and everything else, it's just, it's, you know, it's definitely something that can be dealt with, but you have to be a pretty tough, right?
Sarah says she has found jogging and exercise to help provide some clarity and quiet down racing thoughts. It's still not perfect for her. She still loses her keys, but she's more conscious of her efforts now. Sarah says it's the connections with other people that can really help with ADHD.
I have to do what I have to do. I have to function in the world, and I have to take the steps to make my life easier around other people. And it's helped to make me empathetic and strong. And, you know, any kind of, like, struggle in your life makes you not sweat the small stuff, and there's like a certain kind of like honesty towards things, I think, that you have, that you just become like, okay, let's cut the bullshit and get right to the real stuff. And I think, you know, you get to that point with anyone with any kind of struggle, mental health issue or disability or anything, can relate to that.
And
so I could give a shit what people think, so that's very helpful.
Sarah says that someone with a mental health issue or disability just may have a different way of doing things, and that's okay.
And they have strengths too, just like everyone else. So, I don't know, just being open-minded to different people. And I think, you know, if people could do that, life would be a lot easier for people, I think, in general. Because just accepting people for who they are and not trying to change the...
Okay, and with that, we're going to introduce you to a song. This is brand new. This is from the Montreal-based music producer Dead Horse Beats. What a name. We're going to play something brand new. Like I said, this is a song. This song is called Moments. It's off his new EP, Bad Hopes.
She. Are you interested in Indigenous issues?
Are you down with decolonization?
Do you have something to say?
Or have a topic to share?
We have just the thing.
Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective.
We're a team of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
I'm Niska from my mother.
From the Tahltan Territory.
I'm a settler from Washington State.
I'm from the Qualicum and Musqueam First Nations.
I am Quechua Indigenous from Saraguro, Ecuador.
We broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land
of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Whatever you want to talk about, we're into it.
Everyone is welcome, no experience necessary.
Unceded Airwaves airs every Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
And we meet every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. to plan our upcoming shows.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Unceded Airwaves.
We want to hear your story.
Hello. Before that, you were listening to Dead Horse Beats, new song Moments. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. That ends our show today. And best of luck to students all over the Lower Mainland who have exams, as well as people just trying to get through this snow. I know Vancouver kind of does a lot of adjusting the first day of snow here in the city. I want to send out a huge thanks to Emily, our producer, and our longtime contributor, Deepy, and our brand new contributor, Miriam. And a super, super huge shout out to Lauren Hart, our volunteer contributor who led this week's episode and whose passion really spearheaded our team in this rather busy time of year. So go ahead and like us on Facebook if you liked what we had to say today. And if you want to hear, if you missed something you heard today or you want to hear some of our old episodes, you can go to CITR.ca/radio/allaccesspass and listen to this episode and some others. And if you want to get involved or you want to suggest a topic to us, we're always open to suggestions. We love having more volunteers on our team. You can email accesscollective@citr.ca. Reminder, accessibility collective. Accessibility, the word, it has three I's in it. Now, we encourage you to listen next week. Our volunteers are all heading off on their holiday hiatus, but All Access Pass will be here at this hour. Through the holidays. So now stick around for Synchro City. It's up next with Marie.